When Burnout Becomes Reality, a podcast that combines lived experience with the scientific knowledge of burnout to help listeners prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. My name is Shannon Swales, a human and clinical psychologist with both lived experience and scientific knowledge and skills in burnout. It is my hope that the values of authenticity, compassion, wisdom, and community shine through in each and every episode of the pod. Episodes that share my own and others' lived experiences of burnout and interviews experts, guests to help listeners build awareness and hope to prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. The views, opinions, tips, and the like expressed by myself or my guests are not a replacement of personalized therapy. Just like I have done for myself and many of my guests, I encourage those of you that are suffering to seek professional help. Hi, and welcome to episode 23 of When Burnout Becomes Reality podcast. My name is Shannon Swales. I am the host of this podcast, also a clinical psychologist and a person with lived experience of mental health, including burnout. In today's episode, I will be your guest, and we will be focusing on providing more updated information on burnout that I have gained since the last episode where I focused on what is burnout and how to respond to it and prevent it. So yeah, I've learned a lot since that episode, and I wanted to share that information with you to help you out there prevent or respond to or even grow from burnout, and to help support others as well in your life. Stay tuned. I want to respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners and their custodianship on the lands in which I live, work, and play. That is the Turrbal and the Yuggera Aboriginal people. I acknowledge the cultural and spiritual connection that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples have with the land and the sea, and I pay my respects to elders past and present, as well as the existing and emerging leaders who walk together in partnership on this journey. And I extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening right now. So in this episode today, what I really hope that you go away with is greater awareness and hope. So greater awareness in terms of being able to identify burnout in yourself and others. Also knowing the warning signs and the vulnerabilities to burnout. And to really take stock of the potential or actual impacts and costs of burning out on yourself, on others, and the business. And also to instill hope. So hope with sharing with you the steps to prevent or recover from burnout. Now, I actually delivered this information in a workshop in Brisbane in April to a group of people who were largely entrepreneurs and business owners looking at supporting their health and well-being, or also those that are in their care. And so with it being a workshop, I did have a number of activities attached as well, which I'm going to encourage you to do as I deliver this information in this podcast episode today. So the first one being just what springs to mind when you hear the word burnout. Now, for me, when I was burnt out, so even reflecting back on it, the words that jump out for me is complete, utter exhaustion. My body was literally shut down, unable to function. It also meant feeling very overwhelmed, so lots of anxiety. Pretty much living in that threat system. And it also, to me, is you know, just a loss of pleasure and passion for, or even interest in what I did for a living, and just for life as well. So it was starting to, like spread out to other areas of my life. And also probably the other thing is just on edge, very hypersensitive, which was something I wasn't as well aware of, but was pointed out to me by my husband, and was accurate. So yeah, what springs to mind when you hear the word burnout? I also invite you to engage in a mindful activity that I'm going to share with you now to help with getting the most out of this episode for yourself or for others. So I encourage you and anyone, even if you haven't done guided mindful meditations before, just all you need to do is be yourself right there, right now, and listen to me and engage as best you can with what I guide you to do. So yeah, just starting with finding a comfortable position wherever you are right now, or moving so you can be comfortable. And either closing your eyes or fixing your eyes on a spot in front of you, just allowing your gaze to fall. And just bring your attention to your breath in this moment. There's no need to change your breath. Just simply observe it like it's the first time you're discovering it. Just allowing your attention to rest on that breath as it moves in and as it moves out again. And if any thoughts or feelings or sounds shift your attention away from your breath, know that this is natural and normal, and just gently bring yourself back to your breath, just focusing on that as best you can. And just bringing your attention and awareness to your body, just those points of your body that make contact with the surface beneath you, whether that be a chair, the floor, the couch, a bed. Just bring your attention to those areas, noticing that sense of support around you, maybe some warmth in that area. And again, if your thoughts or feelings or other distractions take your attention, know that that's natural and normal. And just as soon as you recognize your attention has shifted, bring it back to that body, those areas in which you're supported by your environment around you. And from this more grounded space, I invite you to envision yourself at the end of listening to this podcast and what it is that you're now experiencing as a result of listening to this. Like, it might be a certain feeling you'd like to experience, or maybe have a new piece of knowledge, just something that you want to get out of this podcast today, and envisioning yourself walking away with that. And then I want you to think about what it will take for you to achieve that intention. It might be a willingness to engage in the activities, or to continue to listen to the podcast to gain this valuable information, or to feel a certain way, maybe that hope or awareness, feeling validated. But what you might need to do to help you get there. And with that outcome and intention in mind, I invite you to bring yourself back to observing your breath, just allowing that attention to fall once again back on that breath. And when you're ready, and only when you're ready, bring your awareness back to to your space where you are right now. Okay, welcome back. I hope that exercise helped you get in touch with what you're wanting to achieve out of listening to this podcast today and your intentions to help you get there as well. So yeah, let's get into things. I first of all want to share, what is burnout? There's some few things that I have discovered since my last episode focusing on this. And so I just want to share with you a bit of the history first that really helps capture what we understand about burnout so far. So to go back in time, so in 20th century, early 20th century, author by the name of Graham Greene, who wrote a book that was called A Burnt Out Case. Now, he was an English novelist, and this book was about an architect who found himself not able to get any pleasure or meaning from life. And this book has actually made my long list of books to read, but this was the first time that the term burnt out was used. Now, along came a German-American psychologist by the name, I've actually just got the last name, Freudenberger, born in 1926. And he defined burnout as a state of exhaustion, fatigue, and frustration due to professional activity that fails to produce the expected expectations of that person. And then along came two American women, Christina Maslach, a social psychologist, and Susan E. Jackson, a human resource management professor and researcher. Together, they helped bring light to burnout as a syndrome, as a set of symptoms and signs, so a clinical definition. So they defined burnout as a psychological syndrome characterized by emotional exhaustion, cynicism, or a depersonalization, or I sometimes think of it like a detachment from what you do, and a reduced sense of professional efficacy or personal achievement that often they first indicated occurs in caregivers or caregiving professions. So whilst Maslach and Jackson's definition of burnout is most widely accepted today, there are other conceptualizations of burnout in the literature, including one that I want to bring your attention to, Montero Marin's proposed subtypes of burnout, which I think is particularly interesting. He proposed that burnout doesn't always develop in the same way for each individual, which is true. Just in my own clinical experience and personal experience, he proposed three variations that depend on the dedication of workers to their work activity. So first he talked about the frenetic subtype. So this one is typically experienced by workers who work in places that have an overload of work and workers who tend to work intensely to get the work done despite being exhausted. So they tend to be extremely dedicated. Then there's the under-challenged subtype, which is more typical of workspaces that have monotonous and unstimulating work. So repetitive, mechanical and routine tasks. Work that for some workers doesn't provide that sense of satisfaction. So this can lead to burnout. And then the worn out subtype of burnout. Often this profile shows less dedication to their work. So there are feelings of hopelessness and a sense of lack of control over the outcome of their work and recognition of their efforts. So yeah, interesting breakdown there of different subtypes. And I can certainly see the value in those different subtypes when thinking about people I've spoken to or work with burnout. And even my own experience of burnout, I'd say mine certainly was the frenetic subtype. So that overload of work and working intensely to get the work done despite exhaustion. But I also think I had a bit of the worn out subtype as well, that dedication to my work, but that lack of control over the outcome. It was probably a lot more when I think about it, the worn out type, because in my line of work as a psychologist, a lot of the outcomes are out of your control. You can do the best work you can, but in the end, it takes the individual making the changes for that outcome in their mental health. And so, yeah, a lot of it is out of your control, which as a person who was and still is a bit quite achievement focused and outcome focused, that was really, really difficult. So the worn out subtype for me. Now, it was only recently in 2020 that the World Health Organization added burnout as an occupational syndrome in one of the diagnostic manuals that that medical professionals utilize, the ICD-11, mostly used by doctors and psychiatrists. Psychologists, we tend to use the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, and it's not listed in there. They brought attention and bring it into the Diagnostic Manual due to the significant evidence of the impacts on work and personal lives and the economy and public health as well. And I just like to really sum it up that burnout is a phenomenon that develops slowly in an individual in response to ongoing, unrelenting work stress. I'd like to share with you now just a short clip from a guest of mine on the pod, episode 9, Eunice, a clinical psychologist, where she shares her experience of burnout. So let's have a listen.
And I don't take days off work. I don't really have sick days, and I don't really have much time off. But I took the time off. I rescheduled clients, and I never reschedule clients. So I kind of knew that was something for me to do that. I knew something was going on. And instead of bouncing back, I didn't bounce back from that. It just continued to, get worse. The signs and symptoms continued to get worse. So I remember lots of feelings of overwhelm going to work. I had a huge sense of dread every time I had to go to work or start work. I was irritable a lot. Sleep was a big indicator, so I stopped sleeping, and sleep stayed affected for the next, 18 months afterwards. And then it was really hard to concentrate. I couldn't put a report together. I had bouts of crying that I couldn't actually identify why. And I think overall there was this huge underlying sense of feeling really incompetent in myself, in my work especially, feeling really ineffective.
I don't know about you, but listening to that clip there of Eunice's experience with burnout, I could really tell that those aspects of Maslach and Johnson's definition of burnout, the classification of the syndrome, that emotional exhaustion and that lack of or reduced efficacy around her ability to do her job. Very brave of her to share her story with me on her podcast, on my podcast. Just turning now to, how does burnout develop? And there's a number of current and empirically supported theories that try to explain this. And together, not on their own, but together they provide a complementary and global view of burnout. So I'm not going to go into this in detail, but just share with you each of these theories. So the first theory, called social cognitive theory, this is when an individual doubts their own or that of their group in effectively executing their professional goals. This can contribute to burnout. That when individuals perceive a lack of equity between their work efforts, contributions, and the results, this is called the social exchange theory. And when organizational and work stress meets poor coping strategies employed by the worker, and this is called the organizational theory. And I like to there that word poor. It's more that, we only know what we know in terms of coping strategies, and we do the best with what we do know. And sometimes these aren't adequate or cause further issues, like, for example, drinking alcohol. Or in my case, overeating. So yeah, rather than poor, it's just that they're more just inadequate, unhelpful. But we're doing the best we can. The next theory to share to help understand, how burnout can develop is called the job demands resource theory. Now, this is when the demands of the job outweigh the resources provided to complete one's job. This could be the resources, our own resources, but also the resources that the organization provides as well. Another theory called the structural theory. So when the coping strategies employed by the worker to manage chronic stress, job stress, fail. And I can relate to this one, a lot of the coping resources that I was bringing. They weren't enough to counteract the chronic stress that I had been under, and now I realize for a long time, and not just it was a build-up. So yeah, so those coping strategies weren't necessarily poor. They just weren't adequate to meet the chronic stress that I was under. So then the last one to share is the emotional contagion theory. So this is when groups of workers in the same role hold the same beliefs and emotions about ongoing work stress, and it develops through social interaction. I think one thing that's great about theories is it can really help us understand how something might have developed. It's not necessarily exactly how it develops for you or for others, but it can give some sort of indication of how that might develop. So I hope that has for you. Now I want to switch to an activity for you to do, as mentioned in the beginning. And so with this activity, it's a reflective activity. I really encourage to get out your pen and paper to write your answers down for this, to reflect almost like a bit like a journal. Or if you prefer to draw or just to sit there and mull over, go for it, whatever works for you. So this is a question I want you to reflect on. First of all, do you experience feelings of being overextended and exhausted by your work? Do you notice cynicism or negativism towards your work, or a disconnection or distancing from it that wasn't there before? And do you notice any low efficacy, so your belief in being able to do your job regarding maybe past, present, or even future expectations of your effectiveness at work? And maybe you might even want to contemplate why that might be, or how long that's been around, you know, these feelings of being overextended, or that disconnection from work, or that low efficacy with your work. Just reflecting on why that might be, or how long it's been going on for you. So press pause if need be to reflect on that a bit longer, or maybe come back to this part later if you don't wish to right now. So moving on, I want us to look now at, well, who is at risk? So this is quite, there's extensive information on this. And, you know, often we use the terminology like the antecedents or the risks or vulnerabilities or triggers of burnout. So all of those terms mean the same thing. And I have split them up into two categories, which often is in terms of the literature and research on this topic, they tend to do this. So the two categories is the occupational organization, so the workplace factors, risk factors, and then the individual factors, so the factors that we bring as individuals. Now, burnout is a workplace syndrome. So the workplace factors are the primary antecedent for this condition, and the individual factors increase the chances and level of burnout. So that's really important to note. Burnout is a workplace triggered condition. But yes, individual factors do play a role. So let's have a look at organizational factors first. So there's workplace ones. So looking at work type first, which is a risk factor. So whilst burnout can happen in any industry, and there's lots of research to indicate now in a lot of different industries that it occurs, and role types, but often where it does seem to happen a lot more readily is in intensive emergency workers situation, and people in positions of caring for vulnerable others. So our medical professionals, our social workers, our psychologists, HR workers, management, anyone working with people as well, teachers are a big one, carers. The list could go on. Also, unpredictable work environments are more, people are more risk working in those. So your emergency type style services as well. And also work that is perceived by the individual as meaningless or against their values or morals as well. So work type is a risk factor. Workload is also a risk factor, but this is both on a quantitative, so the amount of work, but also qualitative, the type of work. So work that requires sustained effort and when excessive, generating physiological and psychological costs. Emotional labor is another risk factor. So this labor is the result from either suppressing our emotions felt during the job to ensure one is complying with the company rules or requirements, or the expression of emotions not felt as well. Another risk factor is lack of autonomy and influence at work. So this is the inability to influence decisions that affects one's work and a lack of freedom when performing work tasks. So this has been associated with higher levels of burnout. Also ambiguity and role conflict. So when one's work role, what it is, what it entails, and the expectations haven't been adequately explained to them. So that ends up with that ambiguity. And where the work tasks and demands are not compatible with each other, so that role conflict. Another factor is inadequate supervision. So this could be excessively directive supervision, focused on negative aspects without any reflection on what is being doing well, and devaluing achievements and efforts, or non-existent supervision. Now, I've worked in a workplace where this existed, and yes, that was certainly, even though I didn't burn out during that job, I got out before I did, it certainly was something that affected me negatively, but also non-directive as well, so non-existent, non-directive supervision. Another workplace risk factor is perception of injustices. So where there's discrimination or favoritism, you know, fair treatment of workers allowing for required resources has a positive effect on reducing burnout. So important to have fair treatment of workers. So also a lack of perceived social support. So this includes with leaders and co-workers and can involve conflict between co-workers as well. So social support has been found to prevent burnout. Workplace violence and bullying. It shocks me, but I know it occurs that, you know, we're still dealing with bullies as adults. It baffles me. But workplace violence and bullying is a trigger for burnout as well. Poor working hours. So this is any working hour conditions that impacts on balancing family and work life. So this could be shift work, high rotations, night work, long working hours, or large amounts of overtime can lead to burnout. So those are the occupational organizational factors. I want to shift now to the individual factors, looking first at personality traits. Now, personality traits are what we're born with. We don't choose what personality we are, but knowing what personality we are can help us shift and change to work with that. First of all, neuroticism. So this is the personality trait where there's an enduring tendency or disposition to experience negative emotional states. And this one is associated with burnout. Now, I score fairly high on neuroticism. There are traits that are some research indicates that they are potential triggers for burnout, but other research indicates that they're not. So these two personality traits are agreeableness. So this is getting along with others and concern for social harmony. So it's a bit half-half, like can be a trigger for burnout, cannot be. Now I score high on agreeableness. And I think this is where it becomes, agreeableness can be harmful and lead to burnout due to if it's more people-pleasing and disregard for your own well-being. That's just what I'm speculating there. Conscientiousness. Now, this personality trait is about adhering to rules, standards, norms, you're a responsible person, hardworking, goal-directed. Again, I can see how, and I score high on this, I can see how that can lead to burnout, again, where, you know, you move beyond exhaustion and the workload is high. Maybe there's internal pressure or a tendency to be, to have perfectionist behaviors, that I think that coupled with that personality trait can lead us to a risk of burnout. But that's just me speculating. Now, protective traits, so extroversion. So the more extroverted you are, so that's seeking greater stimulation, energized around people, think out loud, large social network, thrive in teams and crowds, enjoy center of attention, and values broad experiences. they tend to be protective of burnout. Now, the interesting thing about extroversion is that most of our society, and including our workplaces, are set up for extroverts. We're actually encouraged to be extroverted, yet a lot of us are more introverted, like me. I'm sort of half-half. I'm in the middle of these two. But I'm probably a little bit more introverted than extrovert. And yeah, our workplaces are more set up for the extrovert. Our society is. And I think if it was the opposite, maybe we would see introverts more likely to burn out. Extroverts more likely to burn out rather than the introverts that do now. And the last one that's protective is openness to experience personality trait. So this is where there's a breadth of interest and creativity. Now we know certainly activating our creativity side can actually help support more of a balance in our life as well. So maybe this is where, and I'm just speculating here, this personality trait where there's that tendency to have that breadth of interest and creativity is what protects them from burnout. Anyway, some interesting stuff there about personality and being at risk. Now, another individual factor that puts you at risk of burnout is the type A behavioral pattern. So this is characterized by competitiveness, impulsivity, impatience, and aggressiveness. I was, I'd say all of those things except for aggressiveness. I'd be more probably passive aggressive, so maybe a little bit. Now, this is associated with the development of burnout. Makes sense. If we're always on that sort of competitive, impulsive, impatient, that kind of stress load that we can put on our body certainly could lead to burnout. Another individual factor is where we have an external locus of control. So this is the belief that some individuals hold that things occur due to external causes, such as a chance, by chance, or the decisions others make. So people high on this are more likely to burn out. So basically those people are unlikely to take, not necessarily ownership, but doing something about it and think that they can do something about it. That's internal locus of control. Another one is high expectations, which is part of what forms the perfectionism behavioral pattern. So high expectations combined with high goal setting lead to greater efforts and thus higher levels of burnout. That was me. Level of involvement, and this is another one that I displayed as well. Workers who are over-involved are more susceptible to burnout, especially if the goal set is unrealistic. And this is another aspect of that behavioral pattern of perfectionism. And pretty much a lot of people I've spoken to and that I work with burnout, perfectionism is something that we all have in common. Now, another interesting thing on the research is age. What they found is as we age, our increased burnout, our burnout risk decreases. But the results are inconsistent on this. Some studies have found an increase in that depersonalization, so that detachment from work with increasing age. In terms of gender, with women, they score higher on the emotional exhaustion aspect of Maslach and Johnson's definition of burnout. And also women score high on the level, they've got lower professional fulfillment and efficacy, that other aspect of the Maslach and Johnson characteristics of burnout. That's compared to men, but men score higher on the depersonalization, so that detachment from their job. In terms of relationship status, so workers who are single, especially men, are more exposed to burnout compared to those that live with a partner. Women living with a partner and working are at additional risk due to being responsible for most of the caring roles at home. And they also tend to, we have higher number of women in caring professions as well. So yeah. Another individual factor is our coping strategy. So we were talking about that a little bit earlier. So here we'll discuss two broad categories of coping styles that have been looked at in the research. So emotion-focused coping and problem-focused coping. So problem-focused coping is where one copes by directly attending to the stressful situation. This coping style is believed to be protective from burnout when one has direct control over the situation. example, reducing amount of clients you see per day. So that was something that I chose to do when I started to notice I wasn't okay at work. I started to reduce the amount of clients. So problem, focus, coping. There was the problem. I was seeing too many clients. I could actually take control and reduce those amount of clients. However, where one doesn't have that control, let's say you're working in an emergency department, so you have no choice over how many clients you see a day, how many patients. This coping style, problem focused coping, is associated with increased burnout. Emotion-focused coping, on the other hand, is believed to be protective from burnout when you are doing this to approach or tend to difficult emotions. So things like meditation, mindfulness, talking to a loved one, rather than avoiding or getting rid of what you're feeling. Distraction, drinking, reassurance. More research is needed in this area to understand this relationship as well. Another individual factor is alexithymia, which is a neurological condition that makes it hard for people to express or identify their feelings. So this has been associated with burnout. Low levels of support at home, stress or other emotional situations that are going on at home, isolation in life, like in terms of social network, low self-esteem, so how we value or see ourselves, and low levels of resilience, so ability to spring back. I want to now share a little clip from another podcast episode, so episode 5, where Davina, a psychologist, shared with us what she came to know was her risk factors for burnout.
Air quotes, because we're on a podcast.
air quote.
I don't think it's the industry's fault. I think as individuals, we put pressure on ourselves sometimes. Mm. I know that was the right thing for me, that I put a lot of pressure, a lot of self-perceived things that I should be doing. Mm. But I think the culture around it rewarded me for that. Mm. And that's, for me, probably why I continue to do it. I got promotions, doors opened. Mm. It was like, okay, you keep pushing, you keep striving, you keep running yourself into the ground, and you're actually going to have doors open. Because that was my experience for a long time. Yeah. And then people often say, oh, you're such an amazing, you're such a high achiever. And I was like, oh, yeah, I am. Mm. Today I try to shut that down because I'm like, I find that that's actually not a helpful thing to say to me, because it's... I'm not necessarily a high achiever. Mm. I like to do things. I like to do things well, but I'm not this. If it doesn't work out perfectly, it doesn't have to. It doesn't matter. Back then, absolutely. Mm. I was very much rewarded for being so young and doing such amazing things, and it was very validating and very my self-worth was very much attached to that.
Yeah.
And again, I can say that now, but back then I had no.
You could really see there with Davina that the work culture really reinforced those work behaviors that were very much aligned with those perfectionism behaviors. That together created, certainly put her at risk at burning out, which unfortunately happened for her. Let's switch now to another activity to help you consolidate what you're picking up here. And again, your choice to do this, but I really encourage you to do so. So this is another reflection activity, which you can choose to write down your answers, just sit and reflect, or to draw whatever suits you there. So here I want you to reflect on what risk factors, individual and organizational, do you relate to or sparked your interest as you heard that segment there, and explore why that is, and go deeper if you can or want to. You know, if you're reflecting on your own experience of burnout, past or present, exploring why that is. But if you're reflecting on just what sparked your interest, you know, also explore why that is, you know. I'll press pause, do that activity, and then come back when you're ready. So in this section, I want to explore the impact of burnout. Now, this is particularly important because often what motivates us to do the work to prevent or to respond and grow to burnout is knowing what it's costing us or what it can cost us. Even if you're a business leader and you're listening to this podcast and you're wanting to understand burnout and help workers, this is also, you know, what it's actually going to cost your business, you know, especially if you're the owner as well, that, you know, burnout does cost, and it's proven that I think burnout and work-related stress conditions is costing the economy billions of dollars. So it is no joke. So whether it's on a personal or professional or organizational level, the impacts of burnout is important to explore as a springboard for change. Change on an organizational level, change on a personal level, and hopefully on a society level as well, that we take this serious. So let's have a look at the individual impacts that has been discovered in the research. Now, I'm going to split these up into themes. First of all, looking at the psychological impact. So, and I experienced all these, and a lot of the people I work with will say the same. So our cognitive capacities, so things like our concentration and our memory, our ability to make decisions, to attend, you know, to focus, goes out the window. Our capacity to cope, so that resilience, is reduced as a result of the emotional, mental, and physical exhaustion. Our anxiety increases and our mood drops. So ongoing burnout not treated can lead to major depression. Also, a dissatisfaction with life or how other people have shared with me, and it certainly happened to me, was a loss of pleasure. Like, I would be interacting with friends and family, my dogs, and just nothing, which, yeah, was really debilitating. Self-efficacy, you know, some belief in oneself and one's ability certainly decreases for a lot of people. Increases in substance use and abuse as well. And there is risk of suicide as well. Now, physical, in terms of the physical impacts, musculoskeletal pain. We hold stress in our body, emotions show up in our body, so hence why we can be experiencing a lot of musculoskeletal pain, because we're sitting in tension all the time. Gastric problems, so stomach area problems. Cardiovascular disease, so heart attack. Injury risk, headaches. I've talked to people with, you know, some, not just headaches, really migraines. Infections, so getting sick a lot, that happened for me. Insomnia and chronic fatigue. And also, due to the increased blood cortisol levels, so this is the stress hormone, we are more at risk of type 2 diabetes. And interesting enough, I do believe I used to work in the diabetes area a while ago, and just for a short time, but if my memory serves me right, our rates of type 2 diabetes is a lot higher, and stress plays a big role in that. And burnout is a stress condition, a chronic stress condition. Okay, in terms of behaviorally, the impacts individually is on job dissatisfaction, low commitment to the workplace, increased absenteeism, so not going to work, increased turnover intentions, so I want to quit. Decreased performance at work, which often gets called presenteeism, like we're there but we're not as productive as we usually are. It can also, the impact of burnout can be doing things that we normally wouldn't do, so deviant or counterproductive behaviours. So we might be, you know, turning up to work high or drunk. We could be more aggressive than we, or aggressive when we're not aggressive, or even misuse of resources at work, and even theft. Relationally, so our relationships, that there can be distancing, that certainly happened with me. I was a lot more distant because I tend to withdraw when I'm in pain, when I'm not okay, or it can lead to aggressive behavior. So the opposite of that as well. it can lead us to drop out of our career or drop out of our work, so job loss, which can lead to those financial difficulties. So we can end up not being able to go back to work due to being burnt out as well for some time or permanently. So we could end up being reliant on disability support pension. So there's financial ramifications as well for not paying attention and doing something about burnout. So yeah, pretty confronting list there. Workplace impact. We're looking at, besides the billions of dollars that I mentioned before on the economy, in terms of the workplace, reduction in quality of services, so higher risk of mistakes. Now, for me as a health professional working in clinical psychology, so that can, you know, it can certainly be, you've got to be on the ball. You know, we are dealing with people's vulnerabilities, and at times it can be life is at risk. So, you know, we need to be well in order to look after our clients in those positions. So, yeah, there's a higher chance of making mistakes in terms of that reduction in quality of what we're doing. Reduction in production output, so what we're able to produce, so those work outcomes. Poor working environment culture, so the culture at work. Significant economic losses due to that high turnover of staff. Often staff will leave or need to leave due to their burnout. And so dealing with that retention of staff, turnover of staff issue, which costs companies money. Sick days, of course, so that's costing the workplace money. Work cover claims as a result of burning out and reduction in output, as mentioned earlier. Also increased conflict in the workplace due to burnout and work task disruptions as well. Now, I want to share another clip of, this was episode 8 of the podcast, where Talia, a high school student, shared the impacts of burnout for her.
Amongst that, and then for the people around me to see this huge change in my personality, it was quite terrifying for them. A lot of them have said, and that it was just, as you can imagine, like very hard to watch someone change so much. But I think it was particularly difficult in grade 12 because the reason I was so burnt out was because of how hard I had been working at school and also other aspects of my life. So for every year of my life, I've gotten straight A's at school. And then in grade 12, because of that, I felt incapable of doing study or focusing in class or paying attention. So then it was also scary because I was like, well, if I can't even, and I kept on saying, finish strong or get good grades in the final year or end high school well, then it's made all the other years that have led to my burnout not worth it, it kind of felt. It's like, if I've worked so hard and done well every year of my high school life, other than the year that it actually counts, that also was just really hopeless and really scary and frustrating, and I couldn't really do anything to change that either. So it was hard to wrestle those things because I knew that working hard and pushing myself to the absolute max was no longer, well, was never healthy for me. But at the same time, this was the one year where it actually would have been helpful to be able to do those things. So my life did just get completely flipped on my head, and the life of those around me as well. It was crazy.
Hearing there from Talia, the impact for her burning out was an inability to be able to do what she needed to do in her final year of high school. So, and also just on her as a person, which freaked out, understandably, her family as well. She wasn't the same person during that time. For this next activity, I'm just going to take a little bit of a different angle. I want you to think about what matters to you in your life, what's important to you. Now, the reason I'm getting you to reflect on this is that when we're thinking about the impacts or reflecting on the impacts of burnout for us, whether that's happening for us in the present or the potential impacts if we don't do something to prevent it now, or in the workplace, it's actually important to make a personal connection, because some impacts may not be a big deal for some people, and for others it's more of a big deal. For me, it was family is what matters to me and my relationships, and one of the impacts burnout was starting to have was on my marriage, and that was a non-negotiable for me. So needing to do something about that. I want you to think about what matters to you in your life, what's important to you, and how does or could burnout affect this? So again, feel free to pause, reflect by writing or drawing or just sitting there and thinking about it. Give yourself some time or come back to this later. So in the last part of this episode, I want to talk about burnout prevention and treatment. So let's look at the workplace, since the workplace certainly is the primary antecedent. Remember, primary trigger. So what can be done in the workplace? So first looking at, now this has been split up into two. So under the workplace, so these are the ones that the workplace can promote, but they're either directed at the individual or at the organization at the workplace in terms of that intervention level. So looking at the individual level promoted by the workplace, there is what they call training. So training in the sense of knowledge and skills to do their job, but also the psychosocial skills that help facilitate one's adjustment to the job. For example, things like conflict management, time management, teamwork, self-regulation and emotional management, mental health, first aid, things like that. So not just the stuff that we need, you know, in terms of the knowledge and skills to do our job, might be the systems we're working in, you're learning those online systems, but it's the actual elements, often the human elements that we also need. So that's what they mean by those, the training. So promoted by the workplace, but something that the individual undertakes. Another one is strength-based interventions. So these work from the premise that people hold within them the abilities to respond to stress. So this involves identification of strengths, which can be done in performance reviews or supervision or mentorship sessions, and provision of developmental opportunities to cultivate and nurture those strengths, and a matching of strengths to tasks performed by the employee. So strength-based interventions there. So again, promoted by the workplace, but focus on the individual. Next one is coaching and guidance. So usually these are non-directive methods by coaches or counselors for the worker to come up with their own coping strategies. And this one's usually good in early stages of burnout. The other one, this one I particularly love, and I was actually a part of creating in my last workplace. So this is the creation of support groups. So this provides a sense of community. It is dedicated to time at work to share ideas and knowledge about how to act and deal with day-to-day professional challenges. It offers recognition, it offers comfort, help, and companionship. And the objective is to reduce the professional feelings of loneliness and to help facilitate exchange of knowledge, to develop ways of dealing with problems. And it's widely used and benefits repeatedly demonstrated. I was interested in the widely used because it's something that I hadn't heard of before. And the one that I had started at my last workplace was more focused on mental health and well-being. So we were focusing on those kind of things. But these support groups is more about helping with those challenges with the work and problem solving those as well. And just in a random conversation with someone I go to gym with, I found out that they have this kind of support group developed. Not in a specific workplace, but amongst the particular profession that he works in and meeting up with other people in that position. So if that's not happening in your workplace, in your industry, I really recommend and love to be part of helping that come to life for your organization as well. So get in touch. The other one, so now switching to interventions promoted by the workplace but focused on the workplace. So these ones are, first of all, improve job characteristics. So this is aimed at reducing workload and improving quality of work through two strategies: work redesign. So this is adding or taking away tasks of the job to make it less stressful and more stimulating for workers, or modification of exposure times to potential stresses. So that's another way. Obviously, it'll depend on the workplace as well about what changes can be made. But improving job characteristics. Another one is humanization of schedules and implementation of work-life balance plans. So flexible work schedules to reconcile that personal and professional life, as we're talking about earlier, is an antecedent for burnout. So finding that balance between work and life, again, where possible. Manager leadership development. So we know now that authentic, transformational and servant leadership styles are related to reduce burnout rates and positively influence workers' psychological resources. So training there and, you know, to help leaders, you know, develop in these practices where need be if they don't already exist. And also the need for feedback as well, leadership feedback that comes from, you know, from everyone to help that person improve. And this is found to prevent burnout. Also, workplace use of rewards and incentives that are not just financial. So recognizing good work verbally and other rewards such as greater time flexibility or protected time to achieve personally meaningful work goals can enhance well-being. Now, I went to a webinar done by Nicholas Petrie, who is a leader in this area. And one of the things that he was talking about that was found in his research was the need for growth activities, activities where we're growing in that job, if I'm getting that right. So I really feel like this, you know, protecting time around these kind of activities. And it's often one of the first things to go when there's time pressures and things that need to be done. Again, certainly happened in the other one of the workplaces I worked in, which again was another reason why I left. Another one is developing a welcoming program. So these are the onboarding training, so essential. So this helps with that role ambiguity and conflict. So with these onboarding processes, making sure that the person that you're training knows the mission of the position, they know the tasks and objectives to be fulfilled. So it needs to be clear and progressively starting off with less stressful things and moving up, and always offering support. And this can be from colleagues, supervisors, regular at the beginning, and that can taper off but still needs to maintain. So really well-designed onboarding programs help prevent burnout. And burnout monitoring and design of customized plans. So need time to identify appearance of the first symptoms and identifying more like the monitoring is needed to identify risk factors and being able to tend to them before they become a problem. So going back to that earlier discussion about risk factors, being able to assess the workplace and where possible, assessing the individuals to know what those risk factors are and being able to put in place a plan to help mitigate that before it gets worse. And last but not least here, so promoted by the workplace but directed at the workplace, is the institutionalization of occupational health and safety standards. So this intervention refers to the obligation of organizations to have systems in place to ensure the health and safety of the worker. So for burnout, this would look like psychoeducation on stress and burnout, counseling services for workers for work-related problems, and referral to specialized health promotional services such as psychologists and medical specialists in severe cases. So let's now turn to interventions promoted by the individual, but looking at those directed at the individual first. So these are aimed at improving emotional and physical state and occur completely away from the workplace. So the first on the list there is physical exercise. You probably heard it before. Physical exercise is one of the important things to help prevent or even respond to depression, and chronic stress being a risk factor for depression. It's not a surprise that physical exercise is important here. Moving the body in any shape or form that you can, and preferably, obviously, in a way that interests you as well. So, yeah, physical exercise can help prevent and also treat burnout. Mindfulness training is really important. There, in studies conducted between 2008 and 2017 on burnout and mindfulness, mindfulness was found to help reduce burnout. So it's definitely something that is essential in helping someone recover or prevent burnout. And I'm a big believer in mindfulness, having practiced it myself and certainly used that with my clients as well. So I think it's a great strategy to help just in general, help out and support our well-being and wellness throughout this lifetime. Another important individual intervention is self-assessment. So a bit like that monitoring, but, you know, that was a workplace intervention. But this one on ourselves. So this involves self-observation and can be done through journaling, or it can be like sort of table form, but tracking one's thoughts, feelings, and ways of coping with them. And it could also involve some valid tests that, like I know as a psychologist and other mental health professionals and doctors use to help with monitoring the symptoms as well. There's some great burnout scales out there that often your health professionals will have access to. There's also a lot out there on the internet, but they're not quite necessarily validated tools. So be careful with the results on those ones. But self-assessment, and I actually partook in, and I still do, in journaling, but it was something that I started when my burnout was severe. Well, I started paying attention and observing my experiences and learned a lot and gained a lot of insight from that that helped me move forward. And just the last one there for individual interventions aimed at the individual is psychotherapy. So, you know, it's often used in more severe and serious cases, but is also good in mild to moderate as well. And this usually focuses on building coping strategies and awareness and monitoring that progress. So where that feeling like you need an expert, someone outside of yourself that can help support you in those gaps of knowledge and skills to help and resources to help support your wellness, to support your recovery. So things like emotional regulation, mindfulness, relaxation skills, problem solving, looking at core belief systems, so mindset as well, and being able to unpack that, change behaviors, development of self-efficacy, so self-compassion, self-belief, assertiveness skills, so communication, lots of things depending on what your needs are. So the last part is we're looking at promoted by the individuals but aimed at the workplace. Now, this is pretty interesting. So two things here that I want to discuss. One is time management. So correctly planning one's time by making efficient use of time available, organizing tasks realistically, keyword there, realistically, and delegating them appropriately, as well as dedicating daily time for personal activities and recreation. Now, that's something I always thought I was pretty good at time management because I got things done, you know, and got through my to-do list most of the time, but that's not time management. It's not time management because it wasn't realistic. My to-do list wasn't realistic and it's still a work in progress for me. But for example, I used to, in terms of an hour consultation with a client, I think I left sort of 10 minutes to do the notes. And I didn't ever allocate preparation time, although I devoted a lot of preparation time, but that was outside my working hours. Now, when I book a client in, I book in 2 hours, but the client I see for an hour, and that rest of the time either side of that session is devoted to preparation, devoted to the administration tasks like notes or writing to the GP or whatever else is needed. So to me, that is an example of more realistic time management now. Now, the last one that they talk about is job crafting. And I love this one. And I worked on this one with the job that I went to after I did burn out, but I was working part-time. And it wasn't in my original field, but in teaching. So this involves actively modifying one's job as long as the mission is filled by reconfiguring the way you approach tasks and negotiating the job content, allowing you to adjust their job to their personal knowledge, skills, and abilities, and to their preferences and needs. The work to be performed does not change, but is adjusted to experience it in a more meaningful way. So this can look like increasing structural job resources, so doing what is possible to develop professional skills and learn new things on the job. It can look like decreasing job demands, organizing work to minimize stress. It can look like increasing the social resources of employment, so asking for help and feedback. It can look like increased demand for challenges at work, so proactively offering to work on projects of interest, offer to assist colleagues or ask for more responsibility. So for me, I particularly worked on decreasing the job demands and organizing work to minimize stress. So choosing to work part-time, increasing asking for help and feedback, which was something I didn't before. So employing assertiveness skills to actually indicate where it was beyond my scope and I either needed help or they needed to delegate that task to someone else. So yeah, so there's a broad overview of interventions there, but the important thing to note is that we cannot prevent or treat burnout without addressing all of the factors that are contributing to both work and individual. If we are just slapping on individual interventions, so things that the individual can do, like go off and go to therapy, if that's what we're telling our workers to do, it's not sufficient. We need to look at what workplace factors are going on here as well. And if a person goes away and does all that work, but they go back into the same situation, and I will guarantee if I went back into the same situation that got me there in the first place, I will go back to burnout, no doubt. Despite all the work that I have done on myself, I now work in a very different way. I've crafted my job, my profession in a way that works for my wellness, and that is sustainable. So yeah, we must treat both areas. Okay, so now let's turn to the last activity. And this activity is actually a therapeutic one in terms of something that can help support regulating your nervous system. So an emotional regulation tool when you find yourself experiencing feelings, maybe anger, frustration, maybe guilt or shame or anxiety, overwhelmment. There's a lot of feelings that come with burnout, and it's called the STOP technique. So S stands for stop, T stands for take a breath, O stands for observe, P stands for pull back, and the second P stands for practice what works, proceed. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to guide you through another guided meditation practice to help you experience this, and then of course you can use this whenever you need to. So take a moment to get into your comfortable positions like you did in the last activity, and just gently closing your eyes or fixing your eyes on a spot in front of you, whichever you prefer, and bring that attention to your breath in this moment, noticing your breath as it moves in and down into your lungs, and as it moves out again. Just resting your attention on this breath, and whenever your mind wanders, whether it's on a noise in your environment or the thoughts and feelings inside, just note where the mind went and bring yourself back to that breath. Just allowing your attention to fall on that breath as it moves in and as it moves out again. And I invite you to bring to mind something recently that has caused some stress. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being very stressful and 1 not very much, picking something that rates about a 3, just something that is containable for you. This might be, you know, a mild conflict at home or at work, might be some feelings of frustration, but just mild. Just bringing to mind that experience that is triggering those feelings, or if it's just feelings that are showing up right now, just bringing to mind, just really connecting with that experience as best you can. Who was involved, who is involved, where this is happening. Just immersing yourself into that stressful event. Now I invite you to stop, to press pause for a moment and take a breath. Take a deep breath if you can, breathing in through your nose, breathing out through your mouth, And take another breath, slowing it down and breathing out through that mouth. And I want you to observe this experience. What thoughts are going through your mind right now in this event? Where is your focus or your attention? What are you reacting to? And what is showing up in your body? What sensations are you experiencing? And I invite you to pull back a bit, like put in some perspective. So what's the bigger picture here? Maybe take a bit of a helicopter view of this situation. Is there another way to look at it? What would a trusted friend say to you right now? Is what you're thinking factual, or is it your opinion or your perspective? Is there a more reasonable explanation for what's going on? And how important is this to you? How important will it be in 6 months' time? What do you think is the best thing to do right now for you, but also for others that may be involved, and even for the situation? And maybe what can be done that fits your values, like the person you want to be in this situation? And whatever that is, I invite you to do that in your mind right now, to play that out and see how that feels. And then I invite you to come back to your breath, just observing that breath like you did at the beginning, just noticing that breath as it moves in and out. And just taking a few breaths, and on that last breath, open your eyes and bring yourself back to your space. Okay, so that's that stop activity. So you're always welcome to come back and listen to that part of the podcast whenever you need it as well. So I hope that that is something that you will find helpful to support regulation of your emotions out there in life. Before we finish up today, I do invite you to contact me if you have any questions or feedback about this episode. I am open to hearing about it. But I also want to share with you some services, psychology services that at Burnout Support, Burnout Psychology Support, which is the business I run, that is on offer at the moment. I offer individual sessions, so working one-on-one with people who are experiencing burnout or work-related stresses. So feel free to reach out. My contact details are in the bio of the episode and of this podcast. But also I run groups. So I have the wellness support space, which there are three different types. There's one for provisional psychologists. So if you're a psychologist in training, there's a special group for you guys. There's also one for mental health professionals, so anyone working in the mental health field. And there's also a wellness support space for anyone. So it doesn't matter what industry or what role, doesn't have to be professional role. You can be a parent, caregiver, non-paying caregiver. That's the group for you. Now, these groups are closed groups, so and small. They're 10 people. All my work is online at the moment, so this is telehealth. You get to see everyone though, so there is that still that face to face in a way. And the groups, we meet monthly for 6 sessions. So the next round is starting in July. Again, I'll put a link so you can find the dates. But the idea around this group is breaking isolation so that you're around other people who understand what you're going through. I facilitate these groups and I have lived experience of burnout. So whilst I'm not walking in your burnout shoes, there is that understanding of your experience. So that's an advantage, I suppose, of seeing me, but also an advantage of doing groups is that you're around people who understand and who get it. Now, these groups are designed to have flexibility to meet the needs of the group members. So often it is a mixture of a space where you can share the challenges and getting support on being able to meet those challenges, but also a chance to go over or work on some psychosocial skills, something like that stop technique tonight, to help too with meeting those challenges as well. So, but a flexibility. So each month it'll be different. Gaining that sense of camaraderie and community. And it's always a space that I create that is safe and supportive and secure. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, please get in contact. Shannon Swales at burnoutpsychologysupport.com or phone 0422 695 576. It is only for Australian residents because my registration as a clinical psych is only in Australia. So I apologise for international residents. And also my website, www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com/wellness-support-space. Anyway, all those details will be in the bio of this episode. But thank you for listening, and I just wish you well. Take care of yourselves, and bye for now. Thank you for listening to When Burnout Becomes Reality podcast. This pod relies on the power of its listeners to push it out to the four corners of the earth, in hope that it reaches as many people in need as possible. So please like, share, follow, comment, or leave a review. Pay it forward, and I will be forever grateful. If you'd like to share your burnout to recovery experience, or you are an expert working in the burnout field and would like to share your wisdom on the pod, please email me at shannonswales@burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To keep up to date with episode releases, please follow us on your favourite podcast provider or by joining our mailing list at www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To check out the burnout psychology services on offer at Burnout Psychology Support, my telehealth practice, visit www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com/psychology services. Once again, thank you for listening, and please take care of yourself. Bye for now.